If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat-up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well, then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
Thunderpants!
What are you laughing at?
Laffy Taffy. They have a funny joke on every wrapper, and I love how fruity they are. Banana's my favorite. Want one?
Sure. Mmm, so smooth and creamy.
I like to eat them after school and after dinner and after...
Whenever you need a good LOL?
Yeah! So, here's the joke. What do clouds wear under their shorts?
Thunderpants. That is good.
Laffy Taffy. Deliciously funny. Head to LaffyTaffy.com to shop now.
Well, howdy there, Internet people. It's Beau again. So today we're going to talk about Biden, that call, and the things that have transpired since that call, because we already need to do an update on it, because there have been some developments. And we're going to talk about foreign policy. So we're going to start off with an incredibly quick recap of the last 3 or 4 weeks. We noticed around the time of the State of the Union that the Biden administration was getting a little bit more, let's just call it anxious when it comes to the situation. The rhetoric was getting a little bit sharper, and there was an indication that they were ready to exert a little bit more pressure. But at that time, we didn't really see it. You saw the Biden administration get a little bit more leverage that it could actually use without, you know, having to redesign the entire U.S. presence in the Middle East. Some of that came through requests for aid, and some of that came through the French throwing up that resolution at the UN that included the recognition of a Palestinian state. It gave the Biden administration leverage, but didn't know if they were going to use it. We saw more calls about Rafah. Then you had the video conference about Rafah. The information came out. It was productive, constructive, but not so constructive and productive that they didn't need a follow-up meeting. We knew Biden's call, a call between Biden and Netanyahu, was going to occur. And there was the hope that that was the moment that Biden was really going to say, this has to change. Because of the added pressure on top of the famine, the added pressure when it comes to World Central Kitchen. The call occurred. The first statement from the White House came out. It mainly focused on what the U.S. said, not a lot on how it was received by Netanyahu. You can't trust the first statements, ever. There's more information that is going to come out, and you can tell a little bit more as things move along. It wasn't long after that that National Security Council spokesperson Kirby came out, and he said that they, quote, hope to see announcements of changes in the coming hours or days. I mean, that's confidence. That's confidence. That suggests that Biden might have used a lot of that leverage. I would imagine the part that the public never gets to hear would be Biden saying something like, what makes you think we're going to veto that French resolution? Because that would definitely get Netanyahu's attention. Something like that. It would be something big to instill this level of confidence, unless Netanyahu's team had already called and said, okay, we're going to do some stuff. Shortly thereafter, the news started really coming out. Netanyahu and the cabinet over there have agreed to open the gate in the north. The gate in the north to allow aid in. This would allow direct access to the most heavily impacted areas. The areas where the U.S. says that famine is probably present. And they agreed to give Jordan access to a port to basically flood the area with food. Realistically, this is good news, but it's just an announcement. The U.S. response to this was basically, great, but, well, it needs to, quote, must now be fully and rapidly implemented. The announcement isn't enough. And it's worth noting, I can guarantee you, this is not all they asked for. This is not all that was spoken about. I would guess there's stuff about Rafah in there as well. Now, as long as no games are played and that gate gets opened, they don't, you know, talk about security concerns or whatever, this stands a really good chance of stopping the situation in the north from spiraling out of control to the worst case scenarios. And to be clear on that, the numbers that we've talked about on the channel that are in the tens of thousands, those are not the worst case scenarios. The worst case scenarios are they're really bad. So that's where it sits right now. There's been movement. How effective it's going to be, we have to wait and see. But the conversation certainly appeared to have an impact. How big and how long that impact lasts is yet to be determined. There are three real quick questions about this that we're going to go through right now. One is that, you know, Biden keeps talking about an offensive into Rafah. They're already doing stuff in Rafah. An operation and an offensive are not the same thing. What's going on now, the raids going in and stuff like that, those are operations. My guess is that, well, I know the Biden administration is okay with those. My guess is that they're actually encouraging them because those are lower footprint when you are talking about civilian loss. An offensive is a major offensive, something that would realistically in Rafah send hundreds of thousands of people fleeing into areas with no infrastructure. If that occurs, the humanitarian situation would be almost impossible to deal with, if not impossible. If they launch an offensive into Rafah, there's not going to be any mistaking it. It's use of military terms that may be getting lost in the coverage. Another one is, why isn't Biden pointing out the delivery dates when he takes criticism about the recent arms transfers? We talked about this on the channel more than once. The whole point of slow walking delivery of military aid, if you believe your ally is about to do something that's just a really, really bad idea, the whole point of slow walking it is so there's not a record of you doing it. When we talked about it, I think I said something like Biden could address it via priorities. So, you know, we've got Ukraine, we've got Taiwan, we have our own needs, and the political winds just aren't with you right now. So don't worry, we'll get you your stuff. It's just going to take a little bit of time. The whole point of doing it that way is to not put it out there that when your ally requests something, you're not giving it to them. So for that to be effective, he just has to take the criticism. It's not fair, I guess, but it's foreign policy. Nothing about this is fair. That's the reason he's not pointing it out. It's also worth noting that some of that, that's just the way it is. Like when it comes to the planes that, you know, won't be there for years, that's the normal time frame. There's some other stuff that's been requested and approved that's taking months to get there. That, I mean, sure, maybe that's a legitimate shortfall, but in most cases, a lot of the stuff that's taking months to get there could be there in less than a day. I think it is possible that some of it is him slow walking it, but we'll never know. I mean, not until long afterward. It's possible, but we don't know that. And then the last one is, why isn't Biden pushing for an immediate permanent ceasefire? Because when he's saying ceasefire, if you don't know, he's talking about a temporary one. This is something we've talked about since early on. Biden and that foreign policy team, they are not going for a ceasefire. All of this started during a ceasefire. They're angling for a peace. All of their moves are angling for a peace and one that includes a Palestinian state. That's where they're going. That's what all of their foreign policy moves indicate. The concern, I think, from the Biden team is that if they get a permanent ceasefire, then there's less urgency to get a peace deal. That's my guess. I don't know that, and that is not something that has been said. But if I had to guess what the reluctance was to support a permanent ceasefire, it's that. Because they're angling for a peace. They're angling for a long-term solution, not just a permanent ceasefire that just reinforces the status quo before the 7th, and honestly, basically guarantees another giant cycle. I personally believe that you could have a ceasefire now and work out the peace. I believe that's possible. That doesn't look like what the administration believes. But if I had to guess, the reluctance is because they're not angling to just return to the status quo. They're going for a peace. They're going for a peace plan. That's what all of the moves with the Palestinian Authority and all of the different talks about regional security forces, it's not for a short-term ceasefire. Because understand, a permanent ceasefire, it's an oxymoron. That's not a thing. If it was a permanent ceasefire, it would be a peace with very, very few exceptions. So that's it. This is a good start. The events, that's a good start. And as long as no games are played at that gate, there's a really good chance of avoiding some really bad stuff. But the White House response of seeing it fully and rapidly implemented, we're going to have to wait to see it before we know that. Anyway, it's just a thought. Y'all have a good day.